show you tell me is hard to find on TV screen, but it's on talk radio. Truth is on talk radio. Talk is all you get, and you wanna hear it straight.
Second hour of the National Intel Report, ladies and gentlemen, on this 16th day of December 2005. My guest last hour and continuing to this hour, Dar Jamail. His website is darjamailiraq.com, and I'll spell that out for you and write this down, and you can follow this gentleman in his writings. It's D-A-H-R. J-A-M-A-I-L I-R-A-Q DarJamailIraq.com. When did you set that website up, Dar?
I had that website set up back in October 04, just before I went into Iraq in November to begin coverage of the Siege of Fallujah.
All right. I have one of our own on the program. It's sometimes rare that you have another talk show host on your own network that listens to somebody else's program. I've got Eric Schein on with us. Hello, Eric. You there, Eric?
Hey, Dar.
Hi, Eric.
How can I not listen to your show, John? It's such a good show.
Well, I appreciate that. What's on your mind, Eric?
Real quick, and this is something that I've been trying to bring up for the longest period of time with everything that I've been exposed to and been involved in, is the reason they went into Iraq was not to just seize the oil so that we could have it for our SUVs or whatever, like a lot of people want to believe. They did this as a strategic military maneuver to place themselves in the middle of the Middle East because eventually, and they know it's going to come to this, is that they want all-out war with China. In preparing us for that, this was a strategic military maneuver because they understood, just like for Rommel, that if you cut off the supply line, whether it's for water, food, fuel, you basically, you know, starve the beast.
Well, Eric, if that was the intention of doing this, I'm sure there's a lot of empty purses over there that we could have filled with a whole lot less money than we've spent so far to put forward bases over there if it was really to go after Red China.
No, because it's more than that. I mean, they do not want to leave Iraq. They want to get military bases in there.
Well, they've got them. They've got, what, 16 or 18 of them right now in there?
But there was also a strong move to remove the military bases that were already established, like even in Saudi Arabia, well before all this started. And they needed to find another country that they could establish themselves with, or within, as a foothold, and Iraq is literally in the middle of the Middle East, and this is not about setting up a democracy, because if it were, then why are we doing it, quote-unquote, at the end of a bayonet, and why are we suspending and dissolving all of our own civil rights and civil liberties here at home? No,
good question.
Just doesn't add up.
Yeah, it doesn't. I'll tell you what, guys, hang on a second. Eric and Dar, just hang on. We'll take more of your calls into this hour at 800-313-9443. Folks, we've been talking a lot about the Iraq war. You've seen it plastered all over television for how many years? Do you have any questions of your own for a man that actually spent 8 months over there? 800-313-9443.
There is one and only one national populist news weekly, staffed by an unsurpassed team of veteran investigative journalists who have dared to rip the veil of deception from the cover-up stories promoted by the big money-controlled media monopoly.
American Free Press.
AFP's no-holds-barred journalists fearlessly seek the truth, no matter how controversial the issue. AFP publishes exciting, in-depth, uncensored news and information good patriotic Americans need to know to combat the coming police state being clamped in our republic. The American Free Press is your voice. Subscribe today and catch up on the real news. Mention RBN when you call and receive a one-year subscription, plus a copy of Michael Collins Piper's latest bestseller, The High Priests of War. All that for just $49. Call AFP toll-free, 888-699-NEWS, or visit AmericanFreePress.net.
It's true. Gold and silver have been a source of true wealth for years. In fact, people around the world have used these metals to buy and sell goods for over 5,000 years, and gold and silver will continue to be a source of true wealth for the foreseeable future. If you look back in history, you'll see that all fiat currencies have failed to maintain wealth or failed altogether. But gold has always protected its holder, a true asset, usable to anyone around the globe. As the value of your Federal Reserve note continues to depreciate, gold will be your only insurance. As an example, in 1975, you could buy a $40,000 home with 1,000 gold coins. Today, that same house is $400,000, yet you can still buy it with 1,000 gold coins. To find out more information on how to protect your wealth, call Republic Trading at 1-800-691-7898. That's 1-800-691-7898.
Do you desire to increase your energy levels and relieve your pain and stress without chemicals, drugs, or expensive supplements? Trivortex technology features subtle energy products that boost energy levels, relieve pain and stress, and much more at very affordable prices. You have the opportunity to wear vitamins, minerals, and nutrients that absorb through your skin rather than taking them orally. This is real, not science fiction. Go to trivortex.com, that is TRIVORTEX.com, to open a whole new realm of health and vitality for you and your family. For those unique, one-of-a-kind holiday items, click on trivortex.com to give those special gifts that will improve health and well-being, as well as amaze and astound. This is Brian David Anderson, researcher and inventor of the Trivortex technology products, wishing you and yours a joyous holiday season.
Get ready for Real Talk Radio. You're listening to the National Intel Report with your host, John Stadtmiller.
We are back. And Eric, I was thinking during the break here, where did you get your information that this is just a staging ground for a possible war with China?
Because look at how everything's played out for the last hundred or several hundred years. I mean, we've been at this game for so long. We supply both sides. The whole point is to have, it's not to win a war, it's to have perpetual war. I mean, right now we're arming, we've been arming China for the longest period of time. We armed Iraq, we armed Iran, we arm Israel. The whole point is that under the War Powers Act, supposed to prevent it or whatever. But when you're at war, there are no civil rights, there are no civil liberties, there are no contractual rights. You've seen what they can do with Homeland Security, to where I think they have to give 10 days notice. But anybody who falls under the Department of Homeland Security, which is everyone now,
sure,
they can suspend collective bargaining rights contracts.
Well, and this war on terrorism is just a ruse to put in the final touches here to the global governance scheme, of which, I don't know, Eric, I'll have to contemplate this more, but I don't see this fitting in with the globalist plan here to... the last thing I think that anybody would be interested in is... agitating 3 billion people.
Look at it relatively speaking, the place that the United States was at as a nation and how developed you were or were not at the time World War One and World War Two, and compare it to Germany and also the size, relatively speaking, it's kind of the same situation to where the United States is now Germany to a large extent in more ways than people care to imagine, and China is now the United States. These people, they're internationalists. They don't care about a flag. It's a stepping stone, and they're using the United States now as a stepping stone towards that one world government.
All right. Well, your show airs on this network, and you'll be on tomorrow from 12 until 2 p.m., and that is Central Time.
And that's with Howard Zinn and Anthony Arnov.
All right. Looking forward to it. Thank you,
Zinn. Peace. Good show.
Thanks. Appreciate it, Eric.
All right.
And we've got some Scottish friends on the line. Astra in Scotland. Go ahead, Astra. You're on with my guest today, Dar Jamal.
Hello. I want to ask Dar Jamal if he could tell us anything about what's happening to the archaeological sites. I've just been reading a book called Ancient Iraq by George Rue, and it sounds as though it was so wonderful. And what's happening to the antiquities? And
yeah, what has happened? Has it been totally plundered and spoken for over there, Dar?
Well, it's a very important question, and the last news I saw, unfortunately, is quite dated. It was when I was in Iraq last winter. I believe it was in January of this year. There was a report in The Guardian that some people had actually managed to get down into Babylon and try to survey what was happening, and a couple of the archaeologists there were horrified at what they found. They reported that, and I can report personally, I've been down to at least that military base. It's down near Hilla, south of Baghdad in ancient Babylon, and it's now a military base. It's called Camp Babel, and it's being used where helicopters are landing. There's Humvees parked everywhere, and of course, loads of soldiers. It's a more of a multinational base. There are plenty of American soldiers there, but also plenty of Polish and from other countries as well. At the time when I was there, actually, one time back in January of 2004, the Spanish, for example, were still down there. But it's a bad situation. There's certainly reports of destruction of the archaeological sites, of the ancient historical sites. For example, there's a very famous spiral minaret up near Samarra that I visited, and that has been hit by an RPG. The top of it was being used by U.S. military snipers, so resistance fighters shot it with an RPG. So that's suffered destruction, or damage, I should say. It's a very bad situation. Now, we're all very well aware of the looting that took place in Baghdad after the fall of that city, and much of the National Museum was destroyed. Most of the objects were taken, a sizable percentage of them, I think over 50%, have been recovered, but we're still talking about at least a third of the objects in the National Museum. And this isn't just only important to the country of Iraq, but to civilization itself. I mean, we're talking about the beginnings of much of our science, the beginnings of law, the beginnings of writing. It's really, there it is in that museum, and much of that is now lost forever.
Any follow-up question, Astra?
I just think it's horrifying and terrifying.
It is. I mean, war has its, I guess, time and place in our history. And I guess that you could say, depending on your point of view, what war is justified and what isn't. But I'll tell you what isn't justifiable is when, and Dar, you said it succinctly, that the culture, see, and this is another thing that the media never, ever, ever, ever talks about, is the cultural history of this country. We, if I can use the term, in cultures and society go, we're only an egg. We're in the embryonic stage. This country over there has 6,000 years of history. And you're right, the science, the mathematics, law, a lot of this has its basis coming right out of the Middle East and specifically Iraq. And nobody in the media likes to talk about this, nor will they ever, ever bring it up. And what they don't do is characterize the Iraqi people. They never say anything positive about these people. And if you ever see anything, any piece ever done, it's, oh, the poor Iraqis, the poor Iraqis. Well, they're even poorer now, and there's a heck of a lot more debt of them. And now we're wiping out their entire history. Is this acceptable to people out there? I think not. But if they were to get the full picture of what has actually transpired over there, I think these troops would have been home already.
I agree with you very much. And I think another reason that the cultural destruction and things along these lines, stories along these lines, aren't reported is because if we do this in a historical context, we look at what the Mongols did when they sacked Baghdad. And literally the mosques were desecrated and destroyed. All of the evidence, all of the bookkeeping of the science and learning going on in Baghdad was destroyed. I mean, the scene was described then as the waters in the Tigris River one day running black from ink from religious documents and scientific documents burned and thrown into the river and then red with blood the next day. Because historically, as any invading empire does in any country, that's what we're seeing in Baghdad once again, not just the extreme loss of life and brutality and bloodshed, but desecration of the culture as well.
All right. Is there anything else, Astra?
No, it just seems to me like we're barbarians.
Well, and I can't disagree with that. I cannot. I mean, which wars did we fight here recently that has been an endeavor by the U.S. that could possibly be considered positive? I just don't see it. Thank you for your call. I appreciate it very much, Astra. I want to get into, we'll take some more calls, but Dar, I also want to get into, you did a recent article here, and it was put on TomDispatch.com, and you did the story on the increasing aerial occupation of Iraq. Now, this is something that is absolutely not reported. As I said, when we first went into Iraq Part 2 of the war, you saw the neat little nifty pictures of the pilots and their onboard cameras on their planes. Guiding smart bombs, laser-guided bombs, whatever the case may be. But you're not hearing about this now, and a little bit later I want to get into that, but let me take some more calls here. First, Jay in Austin, you're up next with my guest, Dar Jamail.
How you doing, Dar?
Hi, Jay.
I just heard you speaking about that, you know, President Bush at this point could, you know, fairly say that his mission has been accomplished. And was wondering why he hasn't and what interest remains for them and why they're so resistant to pull out.
Good question.
Well, this harkens back. I'm glad that you bring that up because I as far as Jeff calling in and saying what he did with regards to preparation for a massive war with China, I'm not going to disagree with that, but I won't outright say I agree with it because I haven't really researched it quite that far. But I do agree with him in the fact that I do believe that the invasion of Iraq is a strategic invasion. It's now created a military beachhead for the U.S. in the Middle East. Iraq is most certainly the heart of the Middle East. It behooves the U.S. to have the several very, very large mega bases that they have there now. They are permanent bases. There is no intention of removing these bases because now we look at the saber rattling towards Syria and Iran. And if we do look at the goal, the project for the new American century, these people are out for world domination. That means controlling all of the resources around the globe, making sure the U.S. has control of them before a country like China and or Russia might have that same control. And I think that's the reason the U.S. will stay there and why this administration refuses to put a timetable for total withdrawal out there, because they simply have no intention of doing so.
And you think that then therefore the our presence there would be something indefinite, like some of the other, you know, countries that we have?
Well, let's try Germany for one. At the end of World War II, we never left. We never left. The bases are still there.
Exactly. Same can be said for South Korea and Japan and go around the world. We have over 700 military installations around the globe.
Right.
In how many different countries? I lost count. What was it, 112 countries or something?
I believe it's 120.
120 countries. And I've got a follow-up question on that. Jay, hold on a second if you have anything more for my guests today. Bill, Jim, John, and others, just hang on a second. We'll get to all of your calls right after this short break for the network.
Can you grow your own nutrition on a shelf indoors in 10 days? Wheatgrass juice is live superfood, the richest nutritional liquid known to man, packed with amino acids, living enzymes, and over 100 elements. 2 ounces of juice have the same nutrition as 3 pounds of choice garden produce. Call 1-877-699-4328. That's 1-877-MY-WHEAT. The stamina, healing, blood building, weight control, and cleansing are just the beginnings of what you will reap from pennies worth of grain. For the book, seed, and the beautiful stainless steel hand crank wheatgrass juicer for $150 plus shipping. No monthly pills, no monthly bills. This is real self-sufficiency. Go to AustinWheatgrass.com or call toll-free 1-877-MY-WHEAT. That's 1-877-699-4328. And thank you for your support of our labors and of the RBN Network.
Would you like to have an income regardless of the economic situation, which few trade people have considered? The art of knife sharpening is a skill that will never disappear and will always be in demand. Whether you have a place of business and just want to add to your income, or would like to travel servicing restaurants, barbershops, or a variety of businesses in need of sharpening tools, you're always guaranteed an income with repetitive business. Learn how to become a successful grindsman. It's easy to learn with our portable Grambo sharpening system. Travel anywhere you desire. Purchase the training manual for only $30, and it'll be applied towards your purchase of the Grambo sharpening system. America has become a service-oriented rather than a manufacturing or even high-tech economy. Take advantage of the situation and become a professional grindsman. It's easy to learn. Start on a shoestring with the overwhelming amount of business out there. Now is the best time to start. Call today for more information. You can enjoy the good life. Call now, 512-297-3152. That's 512-297-3152.
The Idaho Observer is one of the last independent American presses and isn't afraid to print the truth. The Idaho Observer is a monthly 24-page hard copy newspaper in its fifth year of addressing important issues affecting all freedom-loving Americans. If you are concerned about the burgeoning national debt and the Orwellian police state growing up around you, then subscribe to the Idaho Observer. Only $25 for 12 monthly issues. Idaho Observer readers receive vital insight into events as they unfold. Our articles editorially emphasize activism and serve as a networking tool for like-minded individuals determined to make a difference. The Idaho Observer, printing what you need to be fully informed on issues that matter to real Americans. Go to idaho-observer.com or call 208-255-2307. That's 208-255-2307.
Air Force Lieutenant Colonel Karen Kotowski, which, by the way, ladies and gentlemen, she is on this very same network, and she's on from 8 to 10 p.m., and that is Central Time on Saturdays on 5050 on your shortwave. You may want to tune her in. In the Tom Dispatch story here, says U.S. Air Force Lieutenant Colonel Karen Kotowski, I'll get that out, used to work in the Pentagon and for the National Security Agency before retiring in 2003. Well known as a Pentagon whistleblower for speaking out against Secretary of Defense Donald Rumsfeld's corrupt Office of Special Plans, in which so much of the pre-war intelligence for Iraq was cherry-picked and passed on. Kotowski has been consistently critical of the Bush administration. She believes the administration's new policy of substituting air power for troops harkens back to the failure in Vietnam. And she said, let me see if I have this right. We have a foul-mouthed Texan in the White House facing a domestically unpopular war that he never expected to have to fight in order to stop a persistent anti-American insurgency in a faraway country. This president will now escalate the use of air power, striking deep into the heart of insurgency strongholds and destroying the will of those that support the insurgency. This sounds like a replay of Rolling Thunder, March 1965. The Pentagon, led by the last remnant of those who were supposed to have directly experienced the danger of politicized wars, managed out of the White House and the sheer uselessness of air power to win hearts and minds must be, indeed, be out of its collective mind to support the strategic shift like this. Is this what we're going to see in Iraq now, Dar?
Well, I think that's what we're starting already to see, because if we look at the news even today, that literally this, I mean, this is all so staged, it's almost unbelievable, but already today there's talk from the Bush administration. We have generals coming out, General Casey coming out today talking about drawing down troops, possibly removing 30,000 within the next 6 months, trying to get the levels down, back down to, probably more realistically between 20 and 30,000, but getting them back down to the level of around 134,000, which seemed to be the baseline before all of these so-called elections took place in Iraq. And those will, of course, be replaced by air power if these trends continue. I wrote that story. It was really inspired by the latest piece that Seymour Hersh released in the New Yorker magazine, talking about a very strong insider piece discussing that many people in the U.S. military and some of the policymakers in the Bush administration are certainly looking at this possibility. Of course, military leaders are against it, but people in the Bush administration, for political reasons, have to start bringing some troops home because there is so much political pressure being applied to them right now. And the only way they're going to be able to do that and yet maintain and protect these U.S. bases in Iraq and try to maintain some sort of control of the situation is to replace the troops on the ground with a very large amount of air power.
Well, and of course, this is something that was never accurately reported in the media. You didn't see too many stories of how many innocent Iraqis were killed by bombs in these bombing missions. They stayed away from that. But out of the Foreign Affairs magazine, Defense Melvin Laird, and you remember him from the Nixon days, he did a piece in the Foreign Affairs magazine arguing that the withdrawal policy of Vietnamization, he calls it, during that war actually worked. He said it involved withdrawing American troops while fiercely increasing the American air war in what was then South Vietnam and the surrounding countries. He said about the term Iraqification, he says, and I'm quoting him, he says, "The truth about Vietnam that revisionist historians conveniently forget is the United States had not lost when we withdrew in 1973. He said, "I believe then and still believe today that given enough outside resources, South Vietnam was capable of defending itself, just as I believe Iraq can do the same now." Where's this guy coming from?
It's total lunacy. I think it's a little insight into the mindset, you'll let me, I guess I would put that in quotes, the mindset of the people in the Bush administration trying to make this policy. We've got an individual that now they're looking at using this failed policy in Vietnam from an individual who still thinks the U.S. could have won that war, much like a similar strategy that was used when the U.S. military was using information from Israeli counterinsurgency experts on how to fight the resistance movement in Iraq. So let's adopt a strategy, a failed strategy, being used in Israel and Palestine and in occupied territories there, and apply that in Iraq. It's absolute lunacy. It will fail, just as that policy failed in Vietnam. But once again, let's cherry pick this information, just take what we want and leave the rest that may not fit in our agenda, and apply that to Iraq. And that's what we're seeing, which will likely be repeated if all these trends continue right now towards a steep upgrade of the air war.
Well, and my question here, we're coming up on a break in about 40 seconds, but think about this, ponder this during the break, if you will, Dar. How much of this policy in the Middle East right now is actually being borrowed from the Israelis, and how much of the agenda that we're doing right now is on the Israelis' wish list? I guess you could call it their Hanukkah wish list. We'll take the break here. We'll come back, take your calls also with my guest, Dar Jamail. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Real Talk Radio, only on the Republic Broadcasting Network.
It's true. Gold and silver have been a source of true wealth for years. In fact, people around the world have used these metals to buy and sell goods for over 5,000 years. And gold and silver will continue to be a source of true wealth for the foreseeable future. If you look back in history, you'll see that all fiat currencies have failed to maintain wealth or failed altogether. But gold has always protected its holder, a true asset, usable to anyone around the globe. As the value of your Federal Reserve note continues to depreciate, gold will be your only insurance. As an example, in 1975, you could buy a $40,000 home with 1,000 gold coins. Today, that same house is $400,000, yet you can still buy it with 1,000 gold coins. To find out more information on how to protect your wealth, call Republic Trading at 1-800-691-7898. That's 1-800-691-7898.
Do you desire to increase your energy levels and relieve your pain and stress without chemicals, drugs, or expensive supplements? Trivortex technology features subtle energy products that boost energy levels, relieves pain and stress, and much more at very affordable prices. You have the opportunity to wear vitamins, minerals, and nutrients that absorb through your skin rather than taking them orally. This is real, not science fiction. Go to trivortex.com, that is TRIVORTEX.com, to open a whole new realm of health and vitality for you and your family. For those unique, one-of-a-kind holiday items, click on trivortex.com to give those special gifts that will improve health and well-being, as well as amaze and astound. This is Brian David Anderson, researcher and inventor of the Trivortex technology products, wishing you and yours a joyous holiday season.
Introducing the world's best air purifier. The Aeronizer produces high levels of activated oxygen right from the air you're breathing. It works the way nature does in cleaning and purifying the air in your home. Pet, cooking, cigarette, or even cigar smoke is no problem for this air purifier. It's so powerful, it kills molds and mildews as well as bacteria and viruses in the air and on surfaces in your home. Made in the USA of the finest materials with an unconditional 2-year warranty. There are no moving parts to break, no plates to clean, and no filters to replace. Call 877-605-9200. That's 877-605-9200. Or visit the website now, www.aranair.us. That's www.aranair.us. Again, www.aranair.us.
Tuned in to the National Intel Report, the real talk radio show.
We're back. Let's go back into the phones. Jim in Boston. Thanks for holding, Jim.
Hey, good evening. How you doing?
Good, sir.
I just got a couple of comments. Now, whatever happened, first of all, first comment is this. Whatever happened to the law that we used to have of executing traitors, like George W.? I mean, didn't we thought that back in the early 50s, we executed traitors who were against the United that were against the United States? I think we should use it against George Bush and company.
Well, that's an interesting thought. But the problem is that who's going to be doing the trial here? Because
yeah, that's and I think it's going to be very difficult to try to do it because. I mean, one, you got the media who is stacked up on the side of this clown, and which brings me to another comment is, if you look at history, look back as far as 1921, how this was all set up, and it was all part of the British and European mandate, is to set up all these little these fiefdoms. These Arab countries, and I think this is what is all a part as a result of this. And you look at how the World Banking System, the IMF, how they're involved in this, in setting this whole region up. And it's ripe for, I believe that this is where the whole I'm afraid that we're going to be headed for a nuclear conflict if we don't stop these monsters in Washington, D.C.
Well, and especially right now, caller, especially concerning Iran, because they have the backing of Russia right now.
Oh, absolutely. And what I see is not only the destabilization in the Middle East, but also destabilizing Europe. And look what's happened in the Balkans as far as with Clinton. Now, Clinton, like you said earlier, Clinton hit that one, that little fiasco pretty well. But it just got out pretty much for quite some time there.
All right.
And furthermore, what about the scapegoating of the head of Abu Ghraib prison? That the whole thing was a setup.
Jim, hold on a second. You've got a virtual smorgasbord there, Jamal. any comments on that, Mr. Jamal?
Well, I certainly think that undoubtedly Bush and all of the people around him in his administration that have supported, lobbied for, and helped make this entire debacle possible are war criminals and need to be tried and brought to justice as such as soon as possible. And again, as you said, with the media complicity and then the changing of the laws that have already been going on by these people in this country and the people that are just falling into lockstep behind them in the Senate and Congress, make it difficult to do that on top of the fact that the U.S. is not in the International Criminal Court, not a member of that, and for good reason, because so many people in this administration and past administrations, for that matter, would be immediately tried and brought to justice. And there's so much complicity. And yes, in regards with the Middle East, it's really it's a very, very worrisome situation. And I think it's not just about Iraq, and it's not just about that region. It is something that affects the entire world when we start talking about the possibility of using nuclear arms. And we have a Bush administration that's gone out of its way on numerous occasions to lay out the possibility that, yes, we will even potentially use nuclear weapons as a preemptive first strike on a country. Deeply concerning, to put it mildly.
Yeah. Well, I think this morning Bush has just gotten a blow. This morning, I don't know if you've heard that some parts of the provision of the Patriot Act has been null and void. They put to bed.
Well, actually, the Patriot Act renewal, and I want to do a few minutes on this before the end of the program today, because this is certainly newsworthy. Jim, I appreciate your call.
Yep, thank you very much, and have a good evening.
Thank you. You too. Patriot Act renewal fails in sentence. In Senate, GOP fights to save provisions before the end of the year deadline. And I'll save a few minutes at the end of this program for that, but let me first take some calls. And Dara, I hope you were pondering my question that I asked during the break as to the involvement in Israel and how much of this is actually their plan. Go ahead.
Well, I that's a very, very important question, and it's an aspect of this that doesn't get talked about much. Again, not in corporate media, and not enough really on any level in this country aside from here, which of course won't get mainstream attention. But the fact that the U.S. plan and agenda in Iraq now is basically lockstep with that of Israel, of the government of Israel, who's always struggled with Saddam Hussein, felt like he's a threat, bombed his potential nuclear facilities in the early 80s. This situation benefits Israel arguably as much as it does the United States government. And it's the fact now that there's saber rattling at Syria and Iran, we can say the exact same thing. This is, of course, in Israel's best interest, particularly when we've got the president of Iran, who's been openly belligerent towards the government of Israel, even just within the last days. So, of course, Iran is...
And doing and the absolute, I mean, this is like the sharp stick in the cage tiger's eye that went after the Israeli people on the death count of Auschwitz, Dachau, so on and so forth, the number, the magic number of 6 million Jews killed in Nazi Germany. This is pretty bold from this guy.
It is. He is absolutely not pulling any punches whatsoever, and it's be a very interesting thing to really look into what's motivating him to say this on a public level, particularly at this time when the U.S. is basically, the Bush administration is begging for a reason to launch some sort of attack on Iran and may well do so within the next couple of years, the way things are going. But without a doubt, back to the points that you brought up, this invasion of Iraq and a very solid U.S. military presence now in that country, having removed Saddam Hussein, who was very openly oppositional to the government of Israel, just as the Iranian president is now being, certainly benefits Israel. And then we look at it financially. There is the possibility of a pipeline now going from Iraq into Israel. There's talk of diverting some of Iraq's water for Israeli government use as well and the people of Israel. And then, of course, there's at least one Israeli mercenary company operating inside of Iraq. Many of the other mercenary companies are certainly hiring ex-Israeli soldiers who are now working inside Iraq. And recently there was a story that came out that so much ammunition was being used by the U.S. military in Iraq that they've even now begun making purchases from an Israeli ammunition company.
It's to the victor go the spoils. To the victims, they get squat. And they seem to be carving up that country quite nicely. Let's go back to the phones. Bill in Texas. Hello, Bill.
Don, thank you. My question would be to Dar in regard to his sense of troop morale at this time and in light of the fact of the depleted uranium and the suicide rate of our own troops.
Yeah, it's a very important question, and I like to go with the Army's own statistics on this so as not to be accused of being biased on that. But as of last summer, according to a survey released by the Army itself, they conducted their own survey, including every military unit in Iraq, and they found that 56% of all the units in Iraq reported either low or very low morale. So that's according to the Army itself. They also last summer released a report from the head individual in charge of the Army medical infrastructure reported that they found that of all the veterans returning from Iraq, that 30% of them had developed mental health problems within 3 to 4 months upon returning back home. So seeing that those are Army generated statistics, we could probably safely assume that that those numbers are going to be higher. And that's exactly what I saw on the ground. The troops are in a horrific situation. I'm in contact with a few right now in different parts around Iraq, and they're living a miserable existence. They're overworked. They don't have enough armor still to this day, despite what Mr. Rumsfeld might say about that. They're being exposed to things like uranium munitions and other chemicals on a regular basis, and they're overextended. We've got people going back now for their third tour, some going back for their fourth tour, and so all of this put together shows that, you know, this situation, the U.S. military should not be there. It's bad for them. This is not about national security, and aside from Iraqi civilians, people in the U.S. military are those paying the highest price.
True. In regard to the suicide, what do you what's your comment on that?
That was my next question. Thanks for asking that.
The suicide rate, as I understand it, the reports I've read on that is that it's a little bit higher right now than it was during Vietnam. Not astronomically higher, but it certainly is higher now in Iraq than it was during Vietnam. And with regards to uranium munitions, you bring up depleted uranium, and I prefer to call them uranium munitions because depleted makes it sound as though maybe they're not quite so dangerous. And the reality is these are low-grade nuclear weapons. And from the Gulf War, the first Gulf War alone, back in 1991, there's been 11,000 veterans from that war die of the supposed Gulf War illness, which many, many experts believe is essentially radiation poisoning.
Yeah, and it's been misreported even within our own alternative circles. And I always was highly suspicious of this, that it was said that this Gulf War syndrome came strictly from the vaccinations, which I think either they were paid to say or out of their own stupidity, but I always sensed that it wasn't necessarily vaccinations, that there was something else. When I started to hear about the depleted uranium, as you just said, low-yield nuclear weapons, basically that's what they are, but I was highly suspicious of that, and because I was thinking about this. If some soldier in Iraq received a vaccination and he reacted to it negatively and it caused him health problems, how could he come home and spread it to the rest of his family?
Exactly. And it is a very controversial subject, but there's plenty of research that's been done on it that proves beyond a doubt that it's a direct result of radiation poisoning. Doug Rocky, who was the Army's own individual in charge of the cleanup of the depleted uranium program in Iraq, who now is dying of cancer, is very, very outspoken to this day about the situation.
I was not aware. I just had him on this broadcast a couple of weeks ago. He never made mention that he was dying of cancer.
Well, I imagine it's because he's a very humble individual and does incredibly important work, but it does come up from time to time in his writings that he will mention certain health problems that he's having to deal with as a result of the exposure. And hopefully it's not going to be the case, but I've certainly seen many things in his writings that show that he certainly is suffering from the exposure.
Thank you, Bill. I appreciate your call, sir.
Thank you, John.
All right. John in New York. We've got a lot of Johns here today. John in New York.
Thank you for taking my call.
Yes, sir.
I've got a brother-in-law that's been in Iraq twice. He's a police chief in our hometown. And he says the Iraqis, number one, are very, if they were given the opportunity, they would take off like a rocket because they're very ingenious. They're very, they've got a lot of spunk to put themselves, supply themselves. And if they ever were given the opportunity, they would overrun us worse than the Mexicans ever thought of thinking of doing. They wouldn't just take our moral jobs. They're the small jobs. They would take everything. And the other thing is he's back again, and he's been injured, so he was able to get out early. But now they're sending him down to Bolivia. And also I have a father-in-law that's a Syrian. And in the family, they talk about, like, oh, you hear explosions in the background. He said, well, that's just norm, you know. It's just there's people that are creating all this, and there's other people that are just living through the horror of it, I guess. And there's areas you don't go, and you just put up with it. And there is some normality there, I want to say, through what I've seen heard through my family. And it's very distant, I want to say, because all I'm hearing is from phone calls and stuff. They don't talk about it a lot, but it's like my father-in-law was even talking about going back over there because he felt safe enough to do that. But I wouldn't want to take my kids over there and hang, being, you know, that now they're more American looking. I don't know what I'm.
First off, you said your father-in-law was a police chief?
No, my brother-in-law.
Your brother-in-law is. Do you believe everything your brother-in-law is telling you?
Oh, no, we're like opposite.
Okay.
But he's bending. I'll have to admit that I've hit him hard. You know, I put my nuke alert in his face when he came back the last time. He didn't ding it, but there's things I'm telling him listen to programs because he needs, you know, and I'm trying to, and he's an intelligent person. He's not like a dummy or anything, but he also is a very power hungry person.
Well, I was just going to say that because you're telling me that that your brother-in-law is a police chief, and what the heck is he doing in Iraq? And now when he's done there, he's going to get down to Bolivia. What? Obviously, he's on the fast track here to get up the ladder somehow.
No, it's just where they're sending him.
Oh, gosh.
And so anyhow, another thing is that you mentioned is that there's a mixed troops in Iraq and the American bases as WTO bases, and they're poisoning, you know, the numbers on this nuclear flyer says that there were 7,000, a little over 7,000 injured in the Iraqi war, and there's over 500,000 on disability. So they're getting sick from definitely something, whatever you want to put the label on. But bottom line is, if there's that much toxins or poisons that they're doing to them over there, and again, they're keeping the 25 or 30% of the military that will shoot our own in this country, and then they're sending the others over there. Are they poisoning the entire world and going to shoot us all up? And, you know, they want to kill 80% of the world, so are they making everybody so sick they'll be too tired to fight, I guess, because, you know, there's a submarine being built per week and a destroyer being built every 2 weeks or per month or something. I mean, there's so much going on that's building to shoot everybody. I guess that's my question.
Okay, and rephrase your question in one sentence or less.
Is the WTO bases instead of the United States bases where they're making all the military sick? Because we have
Okay, now hold on. Now you're making a comment. Okay, right. That was your question. Dar?
Well, I think just in regards to, you know, what's happening in Iraq and the number of soldiers coming back sick, conservatively, I've seen estimates of wounded range between 15 and 40,000, and then the number dead now at 2,154, at least for right now, although that might be out of date too. That's my focus, and that's what I can talk about. But without a doubt, I think it's very clear that the administration that's now in charge really could care less about the military. They could care less about their health, their well-being. We see them praising and using the military for their political advantage on one hand, right, and cutting their benefits with the other hand, and that's what we're dealing with here.
Well, I mean, it's so bad. I mean, I just did a story the other day that that evening, I don't know if the producers have somebody sitting over at Hannity and Combs monitoring this network or not, but it seems that every once in a while I'll do a story, and then the very same night they've got the same story. And it was the one about U.S. soldiers being shipped in commercial aircraft as so much cargo. You know, we don't have the usual decorum set up around the casualties, U.S. casualties in Iraq. And one, of course, we know of the health issues that these people are suffering over. Another one that you mentioned is a lot of these guys are on their third tour over there. A lot of them are depressed. They want to do anything to get out of there, include shoot themselves if they can get away with it, to get back into a hospital stateside. But the way this thing is shaking out, they're probably going to have to institute some sort of draft, because the college campuses, schools, people are alarmed at the rate that recruiters, U.S. military recruiters, are hammering the colleges and high schools. A lot of parents are looking at this. They're not agreeing with what's going on in Iraq, and they're certainly not very happy about the fact that they're going after their sons and daughters and actively recruiting, even out of high schools.
Without a doubt, recruiting is just basically gone down the toilet for them. They are desperate for new recruits. They don't have enough to keep up with this agenda, and I think you're exactly right. That really begs, what will they do? Because it seems as though a draft is inevitable, that despite the fact that they've got such a huge number of mercenaries, of private contractors working in Iraq that, of course, we're all paying for, it's still not enough for them to keep up with this agenda, and at some point something's going to have to give.
Well, we'll take one more call, but I've got to say this, Dar. I think God himself has placed an angel directly on your shoulder, because you've done some pretty amazing things and gone places that angels would fear to even tread.
Well, I think without a doubt there's something watching over me, whether it's an angel or what have you. It may well be, because I feel very, very lucky and fortunate to have gotten out unscathed and been able to do the work I've done so far.
And still walking and writing and talking about it. To me, that is amazing. Maybe when we straighten things around in this country, that you can take over one of those corporate media whores we have out there and maybe start running straight honest news for a change. What do you think about that option?
I would love the opportunity to have this kind of information out on such a huge level.
I understand. John in Arizona, you're last up on the National Intel Report. Hello, John. Do we have him?
I'm in Daron. He's a great guest.
Yes, sir.
You know, I read an article, I think it was on Monday or Tuesday, on antiwar.com, and it said that Israel wants to invade Iran by March. It says no later than March. So I guess what my concern is what type of false flag operation are we going to have between now and then?
Any conjecture on that one?
Huh?
Dar, any conjecture on that?
Sorry. Yeah, that's a very, very important story. I'm actually glad that that got brought up before we're almost finished here, because I think, yes, at some point, there's going to have to be something big occur in order to justify an attack like that, because without a doubt now, with how horrible things have gone for this administration in Iraq, that without some new outside way to justify a preemptive attack on Iran at this stage of the game, it seems as though that's absolutely imperative.
What will they do? Launch a nuke or something in one of our major cities? Either that or blow up maybe a major pipeline or something in Caspian Sea Basin or something like that?
I don't know. For as many intelligence operations that they have in and around the Middle East right now, I think it'd probably be very easy to go set up a nuke in whatever country and say for Israel, for instance, that they have a nuclear blast of some sort go on over there, and of course that would dispel every rumor that had ever taken place. You know, these nasty rumors kept circulating that, you know, there were no weapons of mass destruction in Iraq or Afghanistan. So,
right.
You know, there's a myriad of possibilities there. For the evil ones out there, it's their smorgasbord. They can pick and choose, and I'm sure they'll do just that. John, thanks for your call.
Okay, thanks, Tip.
All right, you too. Dar, I thank you so much for spending this 2 hours with us. I got to be honest with you, I was trying to find in your reporting here, in other words, a lot of reporters will take on an issue as kind of a white paper. They'll report what they find, and they'll do it honestly. And spending the time with you on this program today, I haven't been able to detect any bias, really. I mean, you're just in there reporting on this stuff, and I was looking for something, and it just didn't come across. You've been doing honest reporting here, and I'm just amazed that that more people are not picking up on your stories.
Well, I think that's why. I think it's, you know, my job as a journalist is to report things as I see them, and that's what I've gone over there to do, and I focus on specific issues. So, of course, there's accusations from some fronts of being biased, but, you know, I choose what I report on. That's what I get to do being independent. But I think, you know, like an individual like Robert Fisk, who writes for The Independent in the UK, who's a longtime war correspondent, as he says, our job is to monitor the centers of power, especially in a time of war. And I feel that right now, regarding Iraq, that's what I've done my best to do.
Well, and I wish you'd continued success with that, because you're, like I said, one of the few journalists that have been there, that is doing the reporting, knows what's going on, and that has the moxie to report what he has seen. And your website, let me just spell it for you, folks. Write this down so you can follow this gentleman and his writings. D-A-H-R, that's Dar Jamail, J-A-M-A-I-L, Iraq, I-R-A-Q, we all know how to spell in Iraq now, .com. So that's Dar Jamail, Iraq.com. And we'll have to have you back, Dar.
Well, I really appreciate you having me on and your support, and it's been the pleasure's been all mine.
All right. Thank you again, sir.
Thank you.
All right. Patriot Act renewal fails in Senate. GOP fights to save provisions before the end of the year deadline. Senators on both sides of the aisle argued that some of the Act's provisions infringe on civil rights. The bipartisan group proposed a 3-month extension to continue debate and amend certain provisions, but the Senate also rejected that proposal Friday. The Senate needed 60 votes to override a filibuster and end debate, which is called invoking cloture. Cloture would have brought the Patriot Act to a final vote, allowing the Senate to renew it by a simple majority, but only 52 senators voted to cut off the debate, 47 against it. The move lays a groundwork for a high-stakes showdown. And also, on top of that, folks, this morning, what did President Bush do by executive order? Oh, that's right. Allowed the National Security Agency to do warrantless stuff based on nothing to continue eavesdropping, and the NSA has the ability to do that. But they were doing it before September 11, 2001. Now they've got the executive order and a green light from the president to do exactly that. How's that for timing? God bless you, folks. We'll see you back here Monday with another edition of the National Intel Report.
America is at war right now. It's not a war against Iraq, nor is it a war against terrorism. It's a new war for our independence. At stake is our Constitution and the very freedoms we enjoy every day. You see, power-hungry politicians are quietly advancing something deceptively named the Free Trade Area of the Americas, or FTAA. Proponents claim they are merely promoting trade by turning North and South America into a huge economic union. But in reality, it's a brazen scheme to eliminate the authority of the U.S. government, submitting our nation to the whims of a new regional superpower. America as we value it will steadily disappear, as will our rights, our Constitution, and our freedoms. Help win the war against the FTAA. Go to stoptheftaa.org and help keep America free. That's stoptheftaa.org.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.